And joining me now is my good friend, Ms. Barb Lamson. Good morning, Barb.
Hey, good morning, Karen. We're sitting here trying to discuss plants, and you were telling me you had some seeds that didn't germinate.
Well, I was a little frustrated because I started a bunch of seeds early because, well, in this case, they're sweet alyssum, so they're flowers, so sure. I want them to be ready when I plant them in the garden, so they'll bloom earlier, etc. And on the packet, it says, normally I put my plants on a heat mat so the seeds germinate more. And these said germinate at 50 degrees. And, mm-hmm. Well, that would not be a heat mat, right? Because heat mats are up to 70 or sure. more degrees. So I planted 111 seeds in a couple of different flats. And so I thought, well, it said 50 degrees, so I'll just leave this one over here. And I thought, well, it's not going to germinate because it's no heat. So then I put the other one, it had 16 seeds. This is a kind of a square full of 16 seeds over the heat. Not a single one of those sweet alyssum, same seed, same packet, germinated. So when they say it likes cool to germinate, obviously it liked cool to germinate. And I thought, wow, because sometimes you think, well, a little heat, that won't hurt it. But no, they truly are cool.
Yeah. Cool well, weather. You think when you direct seed out in the garden, too.
Right.
You wait, 50 degrees soil should be at least for some things. Some things it should be 60 degrees. So, and yet these things germinate. So,
yeah. So
maybe some seeds are more fussy than others.
I think so. And obviously in this case it was. So I was kind of disgusted because, well, I had planted 111, so I guess if there's 16 that didn't grow, I'm okay.
right. That's true. But we like to see everything grow, don't we?
Right, we do. And I planted some pepper seeds, some yum-yum peppers, which I have loved and I've done in the past, and those do like heat. But those, I've only had two of those germinate, and they only have 8 in a package, and you pay like $6 for a package because they're special variety. And that made me disgusted, too. I'm like, only two of you? That's terrible germination. Same conditions and everything. And I'm going to write a note because in the past when I've had issues, they've either refunded or send you new seeds.
Yeah. Well, it's interesting to remember how much work it really is to get a seed up and growing and why we have to pay what we do pay for the plants, because it's not just plop them in the soil and that's it. So something to think about. And you tried two different things. You don't suppose it could be anything wrong with that soil that you've got?
It was the exact same soil.
And they didn't come up in either plants that you did?
Oh, no, you're right. There was, okay, so, you're right. When I think about with these peppers, two of them were in the one soil, and the other six were in another, but other things have come up there. So I don't know. I'm going to have to look at it closer and see what the deal is. Like you said, there are maybe some that are more fussy, and there are plants that they suggest, like your peas and other things, like to be in the cooler weather. Otherwise, they just grow and they shoot up and they bolt, and then they get tougher and bitter and things like that.
Talking about things bolting and things being tough, I woke up this morning and went and looked out the window into my perennial bed that I could see from inside the house, and all these little plants that have just come up and they're just covered with snow, and I just thought, this makes me so sad. My neighbor said to me, maybe I should go out and cover everything with a blanket. And I said, no, I don't think so.
I think the tulips and the hyacinths and those, I think those will be just fine because I've had snow on them before in the past.
Yeah, right. Well, the things like the coral bells, they were green all winter long. They didn't die back. And there's that flowering plant that blooms about Christmas time. It's a house plant. Do you know which one I mean?
Do you mean the Christmas cactus thing or not?
It isn't a cactus at all.
Hmm.
But it gets a beautiful flower on it. That has a bud on it.
The clivia?
No.
Not the clivia. Okay, we're going to all day.
I can't think what it is. It will come to me in a few days, I suppose, and then I'll let you know. But, plants have a mind of their own, that's for sure. But I have to say, in that south-facing window we have had a very sunny winter, mm-hmm. and things look healthy, and they've been growing and getting taller, stretching out. So Mother Nature has really been helpful from that respect.
Hey, we got a couple of folks who asked a couple questions here on our text, and one was a question for us. Can I use old hay bales to mulch trees?
Yeah. As a matter of fact, that's a good use for them. And I would think, be careful. You don't want to push them right against the bark of the tree. Keep them away a ways. And I would imagine with hay bales, you'd have to take them off when you're watering then. Because, I mean, a bale, you can't walk.
I would loosen it and put it down.
Would you? Okay.
Yeah, I wouldn't put the whole bale down.
You wouldn't put the whole bale down?
No, I would take pads and put, because remember how, yeah, I think I would just take and, you know, break it up like, when we were gardening when we were younger, my dad used to chop hay. It was called haylage back then, and sometimes there would be stuff that got rained on too much, and so what he would do was he'd couldn't leave it on the field or it would kill the plants underneath, so he would just chop it up in the box and then he would dump it at the edge of the garden, and we used that haylage for mulch, and it was really great. The thing with older hay, the one thing about that is if there were any weed seeds and things, a lot of them are probably not viable anymore, whereas if it was fresher hay, they might be viable, so you might be concerned about that. And if it's a little moldy, that should be not a problem. And what else do we were we thinking talking about that?
I think one thing about putting on a great big bale.
I wouldn't put a whole bale, no.
Okay, if you break the bale apart, I think that would be okay, because you know the roots of the plants, they need oxygen too,
right?
So that wouldn't be a good idea. But break it up. Just use, you know, I don't know how much that would be, but you take a bale of hay and you start breaking it apart and you have a lot of hay.
Oh, yeah. You know, I actually did that for my raised garden beds, put some, well, I did straw because that's what I had, bales of straw, and I broke them apart and put them in the bottom to fill up, and mm-hmm. they've broken Brace down now and they've turned into nice soil because I put, you know, the other soil on top. The other thing you might want to be concerned about with hay, if it has had any herbicide on it or anything like that, that could be a problem. You might, if it's older, it probably has broken down a bit. So they suggest if you're not sure, you could try it on maybe a small plant or something and see how it does, you know, just to check it out.
Sure.
But otherwise, I think that's not a bad thing. Here's another person with says, I planted a native garden last spring and summer, and it looks like the yarrow is taking over. How do I take some out without damaging the plant, or do I just let it be? Well, it says from a novice gardener. Well, let me tell you, yarrow can take over an awful lot.
It's really one of those really hardy plants. It can take the drought, it can take the cold, it can take everything. I wouldn't be too worried about it. But if you want to move plants around, when it breaks dormancy, right now, before it breaks dormancy, as soon as this comes up, then move your plant out then, and I have a spot ready that you're going to put it into. Don't put it into a pot. Directly plant it in where you want it to go.
Well, I've had the yarrow that has gotten out of hand, so what I do now is when it looks like it's starting to turn to seed, you know, the bloom part, I cut it off, because now I've got yarrow in my grass and things like that where I don't want it, and if you want it, it's fine. But it can take over an area, and there is native yarrow as well. But I last fall, I just took, and I had a giant clump that just kept bigger and kind of overpowering. I just took my shovel and just cut a big part off, and then I cut another part off. And I actually threw some of it away because it's just too much, and I gave some of it away.
Yeah.
And that's okay because it's pretty tough.
Yeah. You know, actually, the bees like the yarrow.
They do.
And there's many different types of yarrow, too. Some of it doesn't spread as easily. I did have a really big one, and it must have had blooms on it that were, I'm going to say, 30 inches high, and the bloom head, the flower head, was really wide, and the bees would come and sit on that, and I would watch them. Nice stalks on it, and it was great to bring in the house and dry and to put into artificial bouquets. I liked it a lot.
You know, you were talking about things spreading. It seems like the hybrid ones don't spread as much because it's the white ones that are more hardy.
It's kind of a native one.
It is a native, yes.
We see it all over.
So yeah. The ones I've got one called, I think it's strawberry blonde or I don't know, something, but it's got red and yellow little flowers, and then I've got mm-hmm. another one that's got really bright yellow flowers. Those don't spread as much mm-hmm. because they're hybrids, and so they don't maybe have as hardiness.
Yeah, yeah.
So,
you know, every year we donate plants to our plant sale, and we got this spreadsheet, and we're supposed to list pretty much the genus and species as well as the common name. Well, I have this one mum which came from the University of Minnesota, and the original name, they changed it. They sometimes a whole group of one species, it maybe most of them don't do well, but there's one or two plants in the bunch that do well, and they'll select those out, and then they'll rename them. And so I had listed this plant, and she wanted to know what the name was. Well, I said it's Autumn Red. Mm-hmm. That's the university name. So she looked up Autumn Red. No, they didn't have any such plant. So then I thought, well, maybe it was Red Autumn, but I knew it was... The name had two parts to it.
Okay.
No, that wasn't it either. You know, sometimes it is very difficult with the university plants when they introduce things. They don't notify you that they changed the name.
Right.
You know, and there you are, and you give somebody something. There's no such plant. And I felt so bad. I mean, we have to give the genus and species, but... that's been lost. It's not available. So
I wanted to say, I was looking through I get a lot of seed catalogs and plant catalogs, and I'm sure you do too. But there was one I was looking, I go, oh, I knew what it was, but it said, it called it a leopard plant. Have you ever heard of a leopard plant?
No, never.
Well, see, I had neither. And I look at it and I said, that's a Ligularia. And it was a Ligularia, and I thought, well, maybe in the description they call it a Ligularia, and they did not, but it is, because, I mean, it definitely is, but they just called it leopard plant, and I don't understand. It was in a Brex, which is a, you know, big catalog company, and I just thought, wow, how do you just do that? Because you'll look at it, and you'll definitely know. So I guess sometimes they just use names that are... I don't know if they make them up to make them more sexy or something, or I don't know.
Yeah, I don't know either. You know, this week I was concerned about an ad in a paper from Menards, and what they're offering here is a crabgrass preventer with turf food. And I just thought, crabgrass preventer, so it's putting... something in there to prevent the grass from the crab grass from germinating and coming up, and yet it's providing
fertilizer
for the rest. And so I did some research on that, and I finally got so confused by what I found, I called Shane, and he said, yeah, that is really confusing, because there's two different things. The crab grass would go in at a much different time than what the fertilizer would go in. So that's not a good idea.
Well, you know, and I think I saw that same one, and I thought the same thing. Are they using cornmeal as the preventer? I think it's which is a natural suppressant for letting them germinate. So it's new seeds. So if you had any new seeds in there, like grass you wanted, it would suppress that. It wouldn't be just crabgrass. It would be any new seeds. Like if I had planted my mini clover or whatever, that will suppress that too. So I mean, that's necessary. I wouldn't do that.
And you can't tell from the ad.
Oh,
you'd
okay.
have to go get the bag and read the instructions on the bag. And I looked at this and I thought, gee, even if I had that bag, I'd have to bring a magnifying glass with to the store so that I could read this small print.
Right.
This is absolutely crazy.
Well, you know, buyer beware, we've talked about that before, just because, you know, the marketing is a big part of it. Oh, look at this will be the greatest, the biggest, the whatever. And, you know, that isn't always the case.
Yeah. When I was talking to Shane, we were talking about, well, when is the right time to put on crabgrass preventer then? And he said, according to the University of Michigan, Michigan State, that the when the soil reaches 55 degrees, that is...
That's not the air, the soil, is it?
Right. That is your clue to start applying, to start application. So when it has to reach 55 degrees of soil, so you're going to have to get a gauge so you can check the temperature of the soil.
But if you're suppressing crabgrass, which is an annual,
right,
seeds, you're also suppressing if you had any other seeds you wanted to get going, whether it's like little, you wanted to overseed grass or something, so
yeah,
keep
yeah,
that in mind.
Yeah.
And if you don't have anything else, I guess then fine, do it. But
yeah, that is so true, yeah.
Hey, did you know that today is World Water Day? March 22nd is World Water Day, the important day in the minds and hearts of gardeners everywhere. It's a day to reflect on how we use water in our gardens and landscapes. It's also a good time to plan out how we can be better stewards of our plant's greatest resource in the months and years to come. And of course, we've been facing all those droughts. And one of the things I wanted to mention, water rain barrels,
mm-hmm,
and they are now available through your county. If you go type in, well, I typed in just here, Blue Earth County rain barrels, and you can order them. They've also got the compost bins, and I know you and I are both big proponents of,
yes,
rain barrels. Save every bit you can, and of course, we haven't had any rain to fill them up, and I haven't put mine out because, you know, it's still not.
We've, you know what? Did I tell you here when we had that little bit of nice weather about a week or two ago?
Yeah.
David had the power washer out,
oh,
and he totally washed the insides of them, and they're just, you know, they're all set. They are hooked up now.
Oh, and my goodness, you are on the ball.
Oh, yeah, and they're ready to go when and if we get some rain. But, yeah, that you can't... when they're dry, when you can't get water there now, you just, it's every time you turn on the faucet, you think, you know, I have to justify this. Is this really what I should be doing? You know, should I just let things go without watering? And the soil was so dry.
Yes.
And it was dry down 9 inches. I'm like a gopher. I'm out there digging in the soil to see, where's the water? No water, just bone dry. And I thought, my gosh, this is a drought. I mean, we're in a drought. We really are.
Well, you know, right now, if things haven't broken bud or you know, and they're still dormant, don't go and water them yet because you don't want to force them to break dormancy.
No,
we're
no.
hoping. I hope so much that we get some more moisture. You know, April showers bring Mayflowers, so yeah. I'm crossing my fingers that we'll get some, and then everything will come and hopefully naturally yeah. do break on its own.
You know what's so lovely is I don't have a lot of wildflowers in my garden, but the ones that I do have, I don't even worry about them coming up. They just come up. They are so adapted to our climate and to going without that they just do so well. And the blood roots are up and they're blooming and they're just, it's wonderful. It's the first thing to bloom in my yard. I'm so happy. And I never planted this blood root by... I never got a plant or bought a plant or anything. It just appeared in my garden.
Birds!
Along the fence, yes. Yeah. And I moved it around, and every place I've moved it, it's done well. So there you go. Mother Nature does it.
And it's still okay to prune your trees now? Although I got to say, there's some you should not be pruning now, like birch trees or maple trees where the sap's going to run
yes,
all over.
Yes.
We had just, Jeff ran, he had gone for a walk and he ran back in the house and said, come on everybody, you got to see this. And we're like, what in the world? We were trying to figure out what, was it a sunset or something that he came back? Well, he took us around the corner. There was a tree. It's a neighborhood tree. It's a birch tree. And it had a 4 foot long sapsicle. Somebody had cut off a branch that was probably, 8 inches around, which is not pruning. That is like totally limbing it. But the sap is running in like birch trees and maple trees. And so it just drip, 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 drip. And this giant 4 foot long, I call it a sapsicle, icicle of sap was there. And so I just thought, wow, you probably shouldn't be, certain trees you shouldn't be doing right now like that.
It doesn't seem very healthy, does it?
No. I wanted to lick that sapsicle, but Jeff said, you know, it's on somebody else's yard. You probably shouldn't.
Oh, yeah, right, right,
or
right.
I would have, because it probably would have been sweet. Sap is, you know.
Yeah, I don't know. you know, one year we had some people who wanted to tap our maple trees, and my mom said that would be fine as long as they gave us some of the sap.
Sure.
And they did. And I can remember we had visions of this maple syrup on our pancakes in the morning, and my mother cooked and cooked and cooked that stuff. Boy, it takes a long time to get rid of a lot of that moisture that's in there and bring it down to where you've got a nice sugar
it's
content.
Like 30 to 40 gallons of sap to make, you know,
1 gallon of,
syrup.
Yeah.
I mean, it's a lot, or even that much. Blake, teacher, he has wildlife ecology is one of his classes, and Julia Battern, she's a fabulous teacher, but they use that little woods out back of the East High School there, and so they actually tapped trees.
Wow.
They just had silver maples, which aren't probably the best. Sugar maples are better, but they actually had the kids go out there. They got to help put in the taps and, you know, gather the sap, and then they got in the classroom and they boiled it. And Blake had never until that point tried it, because I have it all the time, because that's, I love maple syrup.
I do too.
And so he really liked it, and then he's all of a sudden now he's starting to use the maple syrup at home. And so I thought just that experience of him doing that.
Yes, yes, yes. It opened his eyes, didn't it? Yeah.
Yeah, otherwise he didn't believe me is telling him that's really good. Yeah.
You know, it was so funny. We've always bought real maple syrup. And sometimes we've been able to buy it from people in the area, and now we don't have anyone that we know in the area that's tapping trees and selling their sap. So I went to the store, and I bought some maple syrup, and I brought it home. And I said to David, "What's wrong with this?" He said, "Sure, this says maple syrup, but it's artificial."
Oh, no.
It's artificially flavored.
So you didn't read the labels.
No, I didn't. I'm not the grocery shopper in the family.
Oh, I'm not either.
Yeah. And I just grabbed it off the shelf and thought it was going to be good. It was the worst stuff I ever.
Yeah.
It was
fake.
It tasted like sugar water with some kind of a flavoring in it, and you couldn't quite make out what it was. It almost tasted like a chemical or something in it. So, yeah.
Well, that'll teach you to read.
Yeah, it does. It does. And you know, the other thing is, it teaches you to appreciate what nature has given us.
Well, if you would have got the real syrup, it would have been a lot more expensive, because it is expensive. But when you think about what goes into that,
yes,
and the labor and the resources, I know why it's more expensive than the other stuff. And let me tell you, that was a big thing. We had a lot of maples, and that was our family thing. You know, every spring we would do, you know, gallons and gallons of this stuff. And my dad actually had this giant bulk tank that he had got, and we'd put this, you know, haul the sap back from the woods and put it in there, and he had the big pans, and so we made a lot, and we just gave it away, just, you know, because that's how we are.
You know, it's when you do something like that, you want to share it with other people, don't you?
Right, you do.
Because it's so good. It's really, really so good.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
So, yeah, that's my maple sap story. And
that's great.
Yeah, I wish I had some maples now, but I've got smaller ones in the yard. And
you know, I had, you know, I have house plants.
Oh yes, you got a lot.
And I have some amaryllis, and I was so surprised. I've never had a white amaryllis plant.
Oh really?
I've never even seen a white amaryllis plant until I had planted these bulbs up in just small pots, and I thought some of them were breaking dormancy. I've been bringing them up. So I brought this one up, and it shot up this flower spike, and I could see as the spike was starting to open up, the bud on it, it wasn't red. Everything I've got is red.
Oh, no, we've got one now that's white with red stripes.
This one is all white. And I don't know where it came from. I have no idea. I don't know. You can't.
I mean, did you get a bulb from someone or something?
I don't think so. Did I get a bulb from you?
Not me, but Carolyn Becker, I know at Master Gardener, had given out some. I wonder if that's where it was.
Oh, you know what? You're right. I got one of those bulbs. That must have been one of her bulbs.
I bet it was.
I'll have to ask her if she had white. It's just the prettiest, cleanest, nicest looking bulb.
Because the one we got was white with these red stripes on it. It was really beautiful. Huh. And we got two blooms from one bulb. It was such a big bulb.
I have three blooms coming out of one bulb. And so, yeah, I'm just absolutely really pleased about that. But I thought, how did I get this one white amaryllis? This is so strange. But you're right. One of our master gardeners brought them for us.
Yep, it was Carol, and I remember she brought these giant monster. But she plants them outside then.
Yeah, yeah.
Do you do that?
Yeah, I do, because I don't have enough room to keep them inside. I take them out of their pots and plant them directly into the soil. Otherwise, if you have a lot of pots, it's hard to keep them all watered. And you can very easily miss a group, and then they die on you. So plant them into a row or wherever you can get them into your garden. They do really well.
Hey, I got a question. I have those, what they call the naked ladies.
Yeah.
That's the, I guess, the common name for them. But they come up with just beautiful foliage in the spring, and then all of a sudden it'll disappear, and you think everything's dead. Yeah. And then later in the summer, all of a sudden these beautiful flowers pop up.
Yeah.
They are too thick. Can I move them now? They're probably about 6 or 8 inches tall now. Could I just take a big scoop and move them, you think?
Well, it would have been better to have done it last fall.
But they were all gone. I couldn't see them.
Oh, you couldn't see them.
Well, no, because remember all the foliage dies.
Yeah, yeah. You know, you could move them, but of course you won't get any flowers then if you move them now. And the other thing is you're going to set them back. Do you have to move them now?
Well, I tell you what, they are growing too close to my hardy hibiscus, which has overpowered it. So when they come up, you can't even see the flowers because they go right into the hibiscus because it's gotten so big.
That's an emergency. You have to move them then. I mean, that's just silly not to do anything. You really should do that.
And you know what? There's so many that I'm not worried about. If it's set back, fine.
Yeah, right. And how high would you say the foliage goes on them? Have you got about 6 inches?
Oh, right now it's probably 6-8 inches. Yeah, because they grew fast. I couldn't believe how much. Yeah. They're on the south side of the house.
Yeah. Well, you know, they're going to slow down for a long time.
Right.
That there's not a great root system with those bulbs. They've got a very small root system. So make sure that you, when you take them out, include a lot of soil that's attached to them and just make a nice hole someplace else where they can grow and don't disturb that soil that's around them. Now they should do pretty good if you keep watering them.
Okay.
Watch them. Yeah, yeah.
Anything else you have? Because we're about out of time. And
yeah, you know, I just wanted to reassure our listeners that I was talking to Shane at the Extension office, and he said, you know, there's nothing you can do when you get snow coming up like this, and you have young plants that are coming up too, but they're perennials. They should do just fine. Don't worry about them. Sometimes you get a little damage on the leaves, but they do recover. So there you have it.
So don't fret.
Don't fret. No, no.
Okay. Well, Barbara, it's always great to have you in. We appreciate you. And I know you and I have a project that we're going to work on.
Yes.
And we're going to be actually dividing one of Barb's aloe vera plants that's got so many babies, and we're going to pot them up for the upcoming Minnesota River Valley plant sale. Yeah. Minnesota River Valley Master Gardeners plant sale that is in May 18th, I think. Yeah.
I think
so. We'll talk more about that, but she's going to get some babies started, and the pots are in my office.
Very healthy plant and a medicinal plant. Put that on your list of things you should have.
There you go. Thanks, Barb.